sins. We're going to just, I'm filling time as people gradually realize we're restarting. So thank you very much to those of you who are already in your seats, the vanguard of Foresight Net Zero. And as your slightly more laggardly colleagues, conference colleagues, make their way back in after lunch, I did discuss with Eric from the Foresight Group that maybe at one stage they want to offer alcoholic drinks or some other kind of nice drink to round off the lunch session. But if they do, they need to put it in this room. And then, of course, that brings everybody in after lunch to come and get whatever the drink might be that they choose to offer. But I think that's for a future session, not today. So, listen, for those of you who may not have been here this morning, my name is Jonathan Oxley. I'm in the net zero team of the CBI, the Confederation of British Industry. We're a trade body. We work to advocate and champion the views of business into government to try and make sure that we get sensible policy making that helps us, in this instance, move progressively towards net zero. For avoidance of doubt, other fantastic trade bodies are available. I happen to work for CBI, but you have the Chambers of Commerce, the FSB, Make UK, etc., who are all doing great work from the point of view of championing business views into government. But I'm from the CBI. My background is energy and decarbonisation, and at one stage for a period I actually led the development of the Humber Industrial Cluster Plan, that roadmap that you heard referenced in the very first session of today. But we're going to move on now from some of the clusters that we've already heard about. We've heard about Teesside, we've heard about the Humber. Our next speaker today is actually from the Northwest, which you've heard name checked, HyNet Northwest. And this time we're now going to talk about glass. So we've talked about the major energy consuming manufacturing industries. Here's one great example, all about glass from the NSG Pilkington Group. I'd like to invite Philip to the stage. All yours, Philip.
Hi there. Phil Reeves. I'm from the NSG Group, and I think it's better known as Pilkington in the UK, and we make flat glass. I'm part of the process mechanical services division, where we do engineering, all the float line repairs, build new ones, coating plants, etc. So, you know, it falls under my responsibility, the delivery of hydrogen projects to the group. I've got some notes as well. So just as an introduction to us, what are we and who do we do? The NSG Group is committed to zero carbon emissions by 2050. So that's going to be a tall challenge for us. We're quite a big energy hog. We've got two major sites in St. Helens making a lot of glass products. I think we're the leader in the float glass. You know, the furnace is the biggest. I know we've got one of our competitors just down the road here. In Goole, but I think we've got the slightly larger furnace. And we've got a number of different ways of doing that carbon reduction. You know, we're 60% of the carbon we produce is from the burning of fuels, and 40% is from the raw materials we put in. So the lime, you know, calcifies upon melting and releases carbon. So we've got some issues there, even if we solve all of the fuel usage problems. So within 2 miles of each other, we've got these two high energy usage. NGF makes glass cord for rubber reinforced belts for automotive industry. So they're the two. In both, we're looking for a gradual increase in the use of hydrogen over time. And I think that's where we focus on this presentation, and hopefully that's where we'll go. The NSG Group today is split into three parts: the architectural, which is making flat glass, which is a float lines; automotive, which is taking that flat glass, bending it, shaping it, and putting it into cars and other vehicles; and then the technical glass function, which makes printer lenses, the glass cord that I've just mentioned, scanners, etc., so, and lots of other smaller volume but higher value-added products in there. So worldwide, we've got 27 float lines. So the one we're talking about today, you know, it'll give you a feel. We're a bit of an energy hog, and the factory is quite big. It's approximately 2 kilometres long. When we build them for a 15 to 20 year service life. So that's quite a big investment of somewhere between $100 and $150 million capital investment. And then a repair every 20 years will cost us 60 to 70 million. So a big capital investment. What we like to do, because they are refractory built, is take them hot and hold, keep them hot for a long, long time. That is most convenient use. So as we're producing 800 tons of float glass per day, so that's a huge amount, taking that raw material, chucking it in the furnace, heating it up to the 2,600 degrees C to melt it, is it takes a huge lot of energy. I think the colleague before from NZero said, for the trials we've done, which will come on in the future, we consumed an awful lot of tankers and 6 months supply of hydrogen for a 6 hour production slot for us. So huge volumes were needed. In the past, we've used various different fuel mixes, going back to the 60s and 70s. It was heavy fuel oil, it was cheap, readily available. The drive on the emissions and that coming out the chimney wasn't so high. So we've moved over the years towards diesels, gas, and now we're driving towards even cleaner modes of, the hydrogen. We're looking at electric boosting the furnaces. We've had a few in the past where we put electricity into the base, so we put electrodes through the bottom of the glass and then conduct the electricity straight through. Biofuels, where Ardent have supplied us with some materials we've burnt in there. So many, many different ways of we're looking. We've been forced to put pollution plants on the back of the furnaces as a way of reducing carbon emissions. And at the moment at Greengate, we've got a containerised carbon capture system, which is running some trials to try and capture the carbon out of the exhaust, albeit on a small scale at the moment. Moving forward, at Greengate, I'll give you some information on the hydrogen trials. So I think we're one of the few, large users of fuel where we've actually done some pretty significant hydrogen trials. So our colleagues at NZero made the skids for us. We piped it up. We were delivered the hydrogen in tankers, so at 228 bar pressure, high pressure tankers. We had a lot of them queued up, like we said, in St. Helens, delivering them to us, at about 40 minutes, every one of them were getting used up. And then we pressure reduced it down to 0.5 bar, and then we fired into port one. Now, to give you some idea of the scale of that, that's one port of eight in down the length of the furnace. And if I move on, you can see here, I think this is most interesting, this is the net use of hydrogen in our furnace. So you've got the top corner, which is 100% natural gas, so that's how we would normally operate these days. And then as we blended it through that port one, you can see the flame characteristics have changed quite a bit as the blend goes up to hydrogen. Hydrogen blends burns a lot more clearly, as you can see, you can hardly distinguish the flame. So some of the complications we've had with it is the heat transfer mechanism for heating the glass. In the natural gas, it's predominantly radiative. So the radiation goes either bounces off the furnace roof into the glass or from the flame directly down. Now, as you can see on the fully hydrogen, there's not so much luminosity. So the method of heat transfer is significantly different in the hydrogen, what we found. We've also had a lot of water into the exhaust, as you can tell. The hydrogen burns into water with the combustion air, and we've got a lot of water seen in the regenerators, which recover the heat for us. From what we've seen, it's evident that that's there. What we don't know is what that's going to give to us long term. The long term effects of that added water. So we're keen on pushing forward, I would like to say, with the trials and the transition into hydrogen burning, because we will learn from it and get better. In terms of where we're going to get that hydrogen, we've got a couple of different solutions. So obviously, here we've talked a lot today about your packet in your central areas of where you're getting your hydrogen. In the northwest, it's HyNet, you've probably heard of it, but a series of pipelines, predominantly with the hydrogen being generated at Stanlow, so cracking the natural gas, making blue, and then we'll be transferred it up through pipeline, and there will be a parent pipeline or sister pipeline going down, taking the carbon that's captured back to Stanlow, where it can be taken off into the natural gas fields and stored for later use. As you can see on the bottom diagram, we're quite a significant user on that HiNet, you know, so I think we're quite attractive to, you know, the HiNet as a proposition, because we've proven from the trials, as you can see, we can use hydrogen at a blend and we're using it consistently. So if our furnace is up and running for 24/7, 365 days a year, for 15 or 20 years, that's a solid base load, and we can flex the fuel. So while they can't produce a hydrogen, we can just go back on natural gas. That will give us some complications in terms of luminosity, the refractories, and so on and so forth. But we're willing to take that gamble and do it for all the right reasons. I think that's what makes us an attractive user. The second method of obtaining the hydrogen for us is through on-site generation, and we've partnered with a company called Grenian, who are a three-way partnership between the financiers, the operators, and Statkraft, who are the energy distributors. And they've come together and formed Grenian, and they're looking at putting a 14-megawatt electrolyzer on our car park and converting some of the wasteland we've got behind that. And the idea is to tie that to green electricity generated from the grid. They've finished the FEED study on that, and they've submitted to HAR2 application already, so we're waiting on the outcome of that. But obviously, that is the mecca for us, you know, to be burning green hydrogen in our furnace produced on site is pretty much as good as it gets for us. That, you know, that would give us good green credentials and reduce our carbon emissions. I think there's also a discussion to be had about the remaining capacity on the electrolyzer and whether we could fire that with either grid electricity or like the gentleman mentioned before, you know, nuclear energy. You know, we could take the pink or red hydrogen, whatever it's called, I don't know, there's too many names for them, but that would be of interest to us, you know, because we can consume the full capacity of the electrolyzer. Even the electrolyzer at 14 megawatts energy takeoff capacity is only enough for fire port one. So we've got 8 ports, you know, so we could easily take more than the electrolyzer can give. So for us, we will happily take the HiNet blue hydrogen and the Grenian electrolyzer hydrogen. The other user we've got on in St Helens is NGF, that makes glass cord. So they are making predominantly reinforced rubber products that go into timing belts. The biggest difference for us is glass cord and steel competitors is our belts run in oil very well. You know, so the cars that now are meeting the highest emission standards, you know, have most of the belts in oil, and you get a more efficient engine out of them. So that's where we stand apart from, you know, competitors out there. In terms of the process, the cord is made with electricity on site. So the glass is melted in a small shoebox furnace and drawn down through dies, and then we twist it, ply it, and coat it with rubberizing. Those rubberized coatings are fired in through heat furnaces and kilns, if you like. So much more similar to, I would imagine, a regular industry. We're looking at using the hydrogen from HiNet in NGFE to fire the ovens and to fire the natural space heaters and the boilers on site. So all of those aspects, they all carry a little bit of different complexity with them. But the industrial ovens and the industrial kilns are perhaps the ones that are most interest to us, the highest heat user and heat load in the factory. And they're pretty much all supplied, apart from the RTO, from a company called Comfirm, so a big gas train manufacturer in the UK. And we've agreed to set up a load of trials with them. When we first contacted them, they said, yes, you can take 20% hydrogen through our burners, you know, said, well, what's the impact and why can't you do more? And they said, well, we don't know, nobody's asked us that before. So we said, well, will you do some trials for us? And they said, yeah, we'll happily take some more hydrogen off you. So we've got planned to do some more trials and burn some more hydrogen. What we think will happen is that the burners, obviously, it's a, you know, if you go back to engineering first principles, it's a nozzle with a hole. You know, if we ignite it, it's likely to burn. because of the gas train, the size of the pipework, what we're expecting is the igniter might be in the wrong place, the flame detection system might be in the wrong place or looking at the wrong thing, and we're likely to not be able to squirt through as much hydrogen, so we're likely to get a reduction in the capacity of the unit, is what our expectation is on there. But we'll need to do some trials to do that. I think what that'll mean for the site is we might have to have a dual supply where we heat up the ovens on natural gas and then we flick over to hydrogen and run in operation, which is a lower demand usage for the burners in that manner. But we'll wait and see. So really, just to summarise, the challenges we face at Greengate, large scale, you know, it's how we get tons and tons of hydrogen to us on site. I think the only real way for us to meet that demand is either on-site generation through the electricity and the grain, or the high net through the blue. There's literally no other way we're going to get the volumes through to us. They're riddled with issues, red tape, government funding, like we've said before, you know, the political will, all of those things can get in the way, but it is important to us as our business to go down that route, you know, and that's why I'm standing here, you know, in front of you guys saying, you know, look, we want it, we want the hydrogen. Further down the line in terms of the use, you know, the refractories, the control philosophy of the hydrogen, how we mix that blend automatically, so take that off the operator and do it automatically, switch from gas to hydrogen, is a bit more complicated. Process safety requirements, we don't really know. You know, there's no significant guidelines out there for you know, bulk hydrogen uses at the pressure and the temperatures and the systems we're using to deliver. We're following at the moment natural gas regulations and assuming that will, you know, put us in the right ballpark. In terms of Grenion and the on-site production of the hydrogen, it's quite close to the public, so we've got that. We've got the power requirement, so getting 14 megawatts and the grid tie connection is difficult. The footprint is quite large, so looking at the amount of space it takes up on-site, you know, 14 megawatts I think is 7 or 8 containers, so that's a physical large amount of space. In NGFE, again, the site is quite hemmed in, we can't have on-site generation. Obviously the hydrogen technology for the burners, although people are saying they can take 20%, you know, there's not a lot of evidence to support that. You know, it's people just going, yes, okay, the burners will work in that manner. And you know, the space heaters, I don't think many people have looked at